We've had a few movie themes today, in case you didn't recognise one. That's from Gorillas in the Mist, the 1988 movie starring Sigourney Weaver. Of course, it was about Diane Fossey. Now, if this thought appeals to you, travelling deeper to uncover the side of a destination you didn't know existed while supporting communities and projects that you visit, well, if that appeals to you, then this next story is something for you. Lisa Pagotto is living up to the promise of sustainable travel with her boutique tour operation, Crooked Compass. And they're delving deep into Africa, to Rwanda, to Namibia, showing guests how to see a place through the eyes of a local and how to minimise their ecological and their cultural footprint. I spoke to Lisa earlier today. Now, on the line, I've got Lisa Pagotto. She owns a company called Crooked Compass, which is an interesting name. We'll find out about that. But she is about authentic cultural travel that's both a conservation element and sustainability at its core. And I think this is a really hot topic. So we're talking to Lisa today, and I want to welcome you to Travel Writers Radio, Lisa.
Thanks, Graham. Great to be here.
Now, you sound like you might be millennial, are you?
No. I'll take that as a compliment.
Okay. Well, I'm not on the video phone, so I can't see, but you have a very young-sounding voice. But this is this area that you're delving into, this sort of authentic travel, this is really the hot spot, the hot button for the millennial tribe. But I wonder who your customers mainly are. You're very much focused on Africa. So who are your customers?
So our travellers are those people who are very well travelled. They've been there, done that, and they're looking for something different and, you know, perhaps looking for something that they didn't know existed.
Right.
Generally, they're empty nesters, people who are quite curious, someone who really wants to learn when they travel as opposed to just, you know, turning up, taking a photo and saying that they've been there. They're people who are really seeking a deeper experience.
So they want to get involved with the locals. They want to have a serious conversation rather than just read something off a guide sheet or whatever.
Yeah, that's right. And we really look for experiences that we can offer that are truly authentic and that haven't been crafted for tourism. You know, for us, when we say something's immersive, it's doing something like tracking a leopard and then downloading data from its GPS collar as opposed to a cooking class in a school that's been set up for tourism type of thing.
Yeah, okay. I thought you were going to say tracking a leopard and shooting it with your Nikon.
No. Conservation.
Oh, well, I would have shot it with my Nikon, but that's all right, isn't it? You encourage people to take photos or...
With a camera, yes.
Yeah, that's what I meant, of course.
Yeah.
So the two that your people have indicated to me that are popular tours, that you've got a remarkable Rwanda tour, and you've got raw Namibia. Now, that's not for nudists or naturists. It's just getting back to the basics, I guess, in every other way.
Yeah, that's right. And the word raw really comes down to getting to the basics of Namibia, not doing, you know, you think about what people want when they go to Africa, and generally most people are looking for that safari experience. Mm. They want to see the big five.
Yeah.
But for us, it's about looking for something that's deeper than that. Our travellers have already done that.
Right.
And they're looking to be more involved.
Okay. I figured they may be someone who's already done that. So if you have already been and seen the big five, they're not inviting you home for dinner. Who do you go to then to find an immersive experience beyond that mere spectator sport?
So we work really closely with our local operators, and they're the ones who have the relationships with local, you know, non-for-profits and work with the conservation partners on the ground.
Yeah.
And we obviously support by being able to develop a product around that and offering it to our travellers, for those people who are really looking for something beyond the norm.
So they're still going to get the standard of accommodation that they want. They're not going to be sleeping in a mud hut, or we're not sort of getting down to that level, are we, or are we?
No, well, it depends. I mean, generally we're 4.5 to 5-star boutique accommodation. And I mean, we're talking a lot about Africa at the moment. So a lot of those properties are built in areas that are, you know, utilising things perhaps like mud from the local area, but they're done in a boutique kind of luxury type of way where you still have your creature comforts, but you feel like that you're a part of the environment. You're not in this glitzy, glamorous Western, you know, kind of hotel block, something that's built with the local environment in mind.
More like Warrandyte.
Exactly.
Fair enough. Now, the other one that is mentioned is Remarkable Rwanda. Now, Rwanda, I think of Gorillas in the Mist and the movie and
That's
Sigourney
right.
Weaver and all that, and Diane Fossey, or Diana Fossey, was it? It's a long time ago.
Diane.
So is that something, do you go looking for the mountain gorillas, or how do you deal with that? Because there's been suggestion that maybe this is one of the areas that's suffering a bit of over-tourism.
Yeah, so one of the reasons that we sell gorillas in Rwanda over some of the other countries, like Uganda, for example, where you can do gorillas, is Rwanda is extremely focused on conservation. So
right.
you may be aware that they've actually increased the cost of their permits by more than double in the past year and a half. And the reason that they've done that is obviously to limit numbers to an extent, but also it means that those people who are paying to come to Rwanda, which, yes, it's more expensive, they're generally people who are more focused on the conservation side of gorilla tourism and understanding it, as opposed to just wanting to see the gorillas as a bucket list experience.
Mm-hmm.
With the increase in permit costs, that means there's more money going into conservation. There's more money going into the communities that live around the national park and the forest where the gorillas are.
Yeah.
But one thing that's really quite important that I will point out with gorillas is that the experience of seeing the gorillas is so much more than just tracking them. And I think that that's really where we shine with the way that we offer Rwanda.
Right.
So we're not just about tracking the gorillas. We actually spend time with the gorilla doctors, which was started by Diane Fossey, as
uh-huh.
you mentioned, Gorillas in the Mist.
Yeah.
And they are the vets who actually go into the jungle in search of sick, injured, failed poaching attempts, and they rehabilitate the gorillas with the hope of re-releasing them.
Right, okay.
So adding that to a gorilla tracking experience, it really gives it a much more rounded experience. And then we also visit a village that used to be a poaching village, and they've been completely re-educated in the importance of conservation and gorilla tourism. And just being able to pair those two experiences around a gorilla track really gives it a much more rewarding scope.
So do you think you've replaced the income that some of these villages might have been getting from selling permits to shoot?
Well, that's the hope. I mean, I can't say that we as a standalone company have been able to replace whole community incomes, but that's really the focus and the bigger picture of working with Rwanda, is to be able to provide those opportunities of further education, of better financial opportunities for the local people, so that they can see other opportunities beyond, you know, wildlife and see the positive side of what they've got and how that can really help them in the future as well.
Yeah. Now, Lisa, you've obviously been in the travel business a while.
Yes, I have.
Beyond Africa, do you see that these types of immersive experience could emerge in other countries? And if so, where?
Yeah, for sure. So with our product, we operate in pretty much every continent. And it's really a change in the way people are looking at travelling. People are now looking to seek the faces behind the places. And, I mean, Asia. Asia is our biggest destination. People wanting to go, you know, beyond Thailand and Bali. People are wanting to explore Central Asia in depth. They're wanting to follow the Silk Road. They're wanting to understand the story behind the merchants and the old world trading and that sort of thing. And, you know, to be able to live with nomads in a yurt in the middle of Kazakhstan type of thing. And these are all the experiences that we seek to be able to turn into a product for our travellers.
So do your travellers get an escorted tour, or are you putting private sort of at-your-own-pace tours into place?
We do both. So we
right.
have small group tours which have set departures, and then we can also customise for someone who wants something a little bit more independent or flexible.
Right. So you have leaders you've obviously had to train up in this whole approach, right?
Yeah, so we work with local partners in each country. So all of our guides are local guides who speak the local dialects, who understand the local culture. You know, they're born and bred in the destination, so they know it better than anybody else.
Right. And so where do you think might be the next sort of hotspot for this type of activity? Where could you nominate particularly?
I kind of have three that I have my eye on as the next kind of top three destinations.
Yeah.
We've got Ukraine, which has really sort of
okay.
come from nowhere, which is fantastic. There's a lot of traditional Slavic culture in the Carpathian Mountains there, which sits nicely with the style that we like to offer.
See it before it becomes Russia.
Well, hopefully they'll keep their independence. Yeah. But Russia is another one. And, you know, I'm not talking about St. Petersburg or Moscow.
Yep.
Looking more towards the east, like Siberian Russia, the Kamchatka volcanic area.
Okay.
That's definitely an up-and-coming area.
Right.
And then also Sri Lanka as well.
Right, okay.
Sri Lanka's really picking up pace quickly.
And they had a tough time there for a while with the tsunami. Really knocked them around, didn't it?
Yeah, they did.
Be good to sort of see them come out of that with some positive news.
Yeah, that's right. And Sri Lanka, you know, it's got the infrastructure. It's ready for tourism. The roads are fantastic. There's incredible properties. And there's just so much diversity on such a small island.
And is it also, does it have tigers?
Sri Lanka has leopards.
Leopards, right. So there is the chance to see an unusual beast, not just heat a hot curry.
That's right. And a lot of people don't realise that there's many national parks in Sri Lanka where you can have leopard sightings. It's not a rarity type of thing. It is something, if you really are into wildlife, Sri Lanka does offer a premium wildlife experience.
I might have to go. It's the only one of the big five I didn't see in Africa. They were hiding up a tree somewhere, I think.
Yeah, they are the tricky one to find.
We found a wild dog, so that was our compensation.
Oh, well, not many people get to see those.
Indeed. That's
pretty impressive.
Now, Lisa, if people want more information about the type of tour you operate, how can they get in touch with you?
Sure. So our website has all of our small group tours, and that is www.crooked-compass.com.
Yep.
Or you can find us on social media, Crooked Compass, or you can give our team a call, 1300-855-855. 790.
Lisa Bigotto, thanks for your time.
No worries. Thanks so much, Graham.
I was speaking there with Lisa Bigotto. More information is at www.crooked-compass.com.